Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Saturday in the beginning of August. Can you believe it's August already? And happy Saturday on a partly cloudy, lovely, lovely day in the nation's 11th largest city. That would be lovely downtown Austin, Texas, as I always like to say. And welcome to this week's edition of the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. We're here every Saturday afternoon from 12:30 to 1:30 on Talk 1370, The Right Choice. We're high atop the worldwide headquarters over here in West Austin, looking out over the skyline. And of course, there's cranes working away. There's you all running around and going to sports camps or going to run some errands to get some yard work done or maybe getting ready for a vacation that you're going to be leaving on in the next couple days. But we're here to give you a little thumbnail sketch and a kind of a 30,000-foot view on what's going on in Texas and national politics. So be sure and check us out at texasinsider.org, where we post about 10 articles, 10 to 12 to 15 articles every day, give you an ability to, when you want and how you want, go kind of see what's going on in the nation's politics and Texas politics and not have to grab the 24/7 left-wing pop, as I call them, sock puppet media. Russia, 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 whatever the flavor of the day is. And also, you too can be an insider, as we always like to say. You're either an insider or you're not. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter as well, just Texas Insider, where we got about 40,000 followers there. And I tell you, here's what we're going to do today. I've been trying to think and pay attention particularly this week, but think over the last 24 hours or so what was going to be the subject to talk about today politically. And there really, I mean, alert the media, there really hasn't been too much, at least volume-wise and intensity-wise, much going on politically. I mean, the Congress critters have gone on what they call August recess, dates back hundreds of years from when there wasn't air conditioning in the nation's capital, and August was the sweltering month of the year up in Washington, D.C., and the Congress people decided that that would be a time to take a break, and people didn't come and go back to their districts on a weekend basis. They went more rarely than that because they didn't have the capabilities to hop on an airplane like we do today. But the Senate's going to keep working. Mitch McConnell canceled about 3 weeks ago. We talked about it. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader for the Republicans, canceled August recess. And that's a big, big deal because everybody loves their August recess. And particularly, they not only love it, but they are scared to death this year with the midterms elections. We're now under 100 days away from November 6th midterm election. And if you're a candidate and you're maybe concerned about the fact, like we've talked about in some of these Senate races, you're a candidate, a Senate Democrat in North Dakota or West Virginia or Missouri or Indiana or Wisconsin or Florida. Donald Trump was in Pennsylvania the last 2 days. If you're a Senate Democrat, and all those states that I just ticked off have Senate Democrats up for re-election, and you know that Donald Trump carried your state by 39% like he did in North Dakota, and you're a Democrat running in that state, you were looking down the barrel of a gun and you were seeing your life flash before your eyes, because that's almost mathematically impossible to overcome just on a numerical basis. And you want to be back in your district, back in your home state. And to have the Senate Majority Leader cancel August recess, you've just had one of your key campaign assets and seasons taken away from you. And why is Mitch McConnell doing that? He's doing that because Senate Democrats and under Chuckie Schumer from New York continue to stall Donald Trump's appointments, particularly in the area of judicial nominees. We've got this Supreme Court nominee coming up, and that's going to be voted on, Judge Kavanaugh, before the election comes. We've been promised by Senator McConnell. But there needs to be, I read something the other day that only like half of the typical presidential nominees, if you look back under Barack Obama and George W. Bush, even all the way back to Bill Clinton, there's usually by this time about 60 to 70% of the nominees a president nominates for senior positions in the Department of Energy or senior positions over at the State Department or education or commerce, you name it, any of the agencies. And Donald Trump's got half that number. It's because the Democrats have continued to, quote unquote, resist and throw up all the distractions that they can. And as a result, Mitch McConnell said, fine, you want to play that game? I'm going to cancel August recess. We got too many things to be doing and too many positions to be confirmed so that we can allow this administration to get things done. I'm canceling August recess. That being said, on the Senate side, the House guys are on recess, and they'll be probably on our local news, and you'll be seeing them out at the chamber monthly banquets and your local Rotary clubs and maybe on Talk 1370 even, for all we know, more often. But the congressional recess is in full swing, and what are most people doing? I mean, you watch the nightly news. I've got MSNBC on right now and here in the studio, and they're replaying a clip of President Trump. He was in Pennsylvania, where, again, there's a big, tight Senate race going on, and Donald Trump carried the state of Pennsylvania when nobody gave him a snowball's chance in HE double toothpicks 2 years ago. That was going to be Hillary Clinton's stopgap, her wall from President Trump winning the election. Then he went to Florida, where Senator Bill Nelson is a Democrat who's got former Governor Rick Scott running against him. Donald Trump is in the middle of a campaign season. He's getting more done economically, which we're going to get into here after the commercial break. He's executing his 2018 campaign season, and that is to be going to places, as we've talked about. He's been to Michigan. He's been to Wisconsin. He's been to Missouri. He's been to North Dakota. He's going to these states where the economy is recovering and where there are vulnerable Democrats, particularly in the Senate. And whether or not we see the quote-unquote blue wave that's coming is yet to be seen. But one thing that I want to focus on, and I got to mention, we're going to hear after the first break, we're going to have my old friend with the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, their chief economist, Carr Ingram, is going to join us. And we're going to talk about what the mindset is of the American people right now, because this last week and today in front of the on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, the top headline is Job Engine Hums Along. Workers enjoyed a strong start to summer with low unemployment and steady wage gains offering fresh incentives to jump into the job market. Employers added 157,000 jobs across the nation in addition to the previous months of May and June numbers being expanded to indicate a faster rate of growth than has been seen in nearly a decade. That's the type of thing, and you've heard me say it before, what do presidents actually do? More than anything else, I think it's, I mean, we all think about him declaring war, or maybe coming up with a major initiative like Obamacare, or a major initiative, Bill Clinton, go way back when, he reformed the welfare system of sorts with a lot of help from Republicans in Congress. Donald Trump's passed a tax cut. We see him going over to North Korea and dealing with Vladimir Putin, being our nation's ambassador at large. But what a lot of folks don't realize, and we'll see him out campaigning, like I mentioned, and kissing babies and those types of things. But what a lot of people don't realize, and has always been something that I think is as important as anything, and that, frankly, is what happened during the election. The president of the United States sets a mindset for us voters, us consumers, us constituents, and for all of America. And how does he do that? I always go back to the day and age of Ronald Reagan never took a question about if the economy was going to turn south. He said, no, we're doing great. And he focused on the positive. Always be part of the solution, not the problem. And Herbert Daddy Bush, as I fondly call him, Herbert Walker Bush, got in there and he started taking questions. You know, economic figures go up and down month to month to month while they're in a general, longer term trend. But senior President Bush started taking some of these questions. And then the next thing you know, the discussion becomes the reality. And Donald Trump has got America being feared by our enemies around the globe. He's got us being respected by our friends. He's got us as consumers. I saw something this week that said consumer confidence is up. Consumer spending makes up about 70% of our nation's economy. It's in solid shape the last quarter, going up 2.2%. The most interesting thing that I saw the other day, though, was an article in the Wall Street Journal entitled Modest Wage Earners Gain Confidence. And again, this is what the president's done. Economic confidence among lower income Americans has taken a recent leap, the latest evidence that benefits of the economic expansion are reaching a broader group of workers. That is key, folks, because if you look where Donald Trump won the presidency in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Wisconsin, and Michigan, almost won Minnesota, states he wasn't supposed to win, he is setting a new tone, and the Democrats don't have any message to counter it. We're going to have to take our first commercial break. Be sure and come back after this first commercial break when we're going to be visiting with Carr Ingham from the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers to break down some of these numbers and talk to you about why we should be excited about the Texas economy and what's going on across the nation. On the Texas Insider Show, I'm Jim Cardle, and we will be right back. Good job there, Brian. We got Brian and Casey producing the show today, and welcome back to the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. Appreciate you joining us, as we hope you do every Saturday afternoon from 12:30 to 1:30. Where we are here in the Talk 1370 Right Choice Worldwide headquarters over in West Austin, giving you a little update on what's happened last week in politics and what maybe is coming down the pike. And as I was mentioning before the break, there hadn't been too much, a whole heck of a lot going on this last week politically. I mean, you turn on the cable news or watch your nightly news, there's a little of the, it's a pure dribble at this point. Russia, Russia, Russia. I guess Paul Manafort, if any of you know who Paul Manafort is, a former campaign manager for Donald Trump, has got his trial going up outside of Virginia, outside of D.C. in Virginia. And I tell you, the biggest news I think a lot of folks are paying attention to are either the wildfires out in California, where there's great destruction going on, or frankly, here locally on Texas Insider this week, the biggest news an area of interest has actually been this colossal joke of an idea to change the city of Austin's name proposed by City Hall. We'll see where that goes. But most of the news, I think, this week, and as we go about our summer with the kids' sports leagues and vacations and, you know, keeping the yard from burning up and things like that, has been kind of a nice respite where we can just take a breather from politics. But yet this last week we had a slew of economic numbers come out, and it's going to be setting the mindset, I think, my humble little opinion, between now and November 6th, which is when the midterm elections are. And for those of you who pay too much attention like I do, we're underneath 100 days before the election. So get your big boy and big girl panties on, because things will start ratcheting up. But I'm going to bring in Carr Ingram with the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers. Before I do that, let's just recap, as I was trying to say. Last Friday, folks, we had the news that, and we talked about it last week, and that the economy in the second quarter of this year, that would be April, May, and June, the economy is currently growing at the fastest rate it has in about, some people say 4 years. It's really about 10 to 15. The number of jobless claims are at the lowest level since 1969. On Tuesday this week, we learned that worker pay and benefits, that's your worker paycheck and your benefits, are rising at the fastest rate they have in 10 years. Then on Wednesday, we find out that consumer spending has continued to increase. The Federal Reserve releases those numbers. And consumer spending makes up about 70% of our economy, and it indicates that we're all feeling better about jobs and so forth. Thursday morning came the unemployment claims, and unemployment claims continue to be near the lowest level in about 45 years. That's the unemployment claims, people who are claiming unemployment. And then on Friday came the employment numbers that the nation added about 157,000 jobs. And Carr Ingram with the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, you're an economist, which you and I joke about as both being economists, as an accountant with a sense of humor. How in the heck are you doing these days?
Well, I'm doing just fine. How about you, my friend?
Well, not too bad with these numbers. And I tell you, we in Texas take, or not, I shouldn't say that. We don't necessarily take it for granted, but we just don't realize how lucky we are, because Texas really is leading the nation. That was another figure that came out in the last week, that Texas's economy is about 9%, I think, of the national gross domestic product now. But give us your read before we get into the oil patch, into the particulars about the Texas economy, maybe. Tell us the 30,000-foot view from your perspective, and how are we doing it, and is it going to last?
Well, as you suggest, I am an oil and gas economist. There's no doubt about that. I have to be considered an oil and gas guy, an industry economist, and I do have the great pleasure of serving as the chief economist for the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, just an upstream trade association in Texas, crude oil and natural gas producers, drilling companies, service companies, and then other affiliated firms and individuals. But I'm also just an economist, so I watch national numbers carefully, and I watch statewide numbers in Texas, and I'm a regional metro guy around Texas. And do work at that level for banks and chambers and economic development groups and media corporations and so on and so forth.
Okay.
And so I generally am nose deep in these numbers that we're talking about day in and day out.
And there's, you testify before the legislative committees and are considered an economic expert of sorts, to the extent that we've got about a handful or a dozen of you type folks that are economic experts and can advise legislators on how to be taking policy moves.
That is true. And I also serve on, by the way, the comptroller, Comptroller Hager's economic roundtable. So this was a group that he convened.
Excellent.
In advance of the last legislative session. And he's really the first one that have thought of this. I thought it was a great idea. So we put together a group that he calls an economic roundtable. It's just a group of economists, some within Texas, some from elsewhere, to come in and give the comptroller's office perspective on the general condition of the Texas economy relative to the national economy, relative to industries within Texas and general trends. And the objective of that exercise, as you can well imagine, is to help the comptroller's office in crafting their biennial revenue estimate for a coming legislative session. Well,
let me interrupt you there, Carr, because for those who don't know, the comptroller, a lot of folks will think of the comptroller as being the person that collects our sales taxes and is kind of a tax accounting type. But that is the important thing that you mentioned, is that that is the advisor, leads to being the advisor to the, building the state budget. So it's a key economic office in our state of Texas.
No doubt about it. And beyond just being an advisor, they actually provide the legislature with the number they're going to have to work with in terms of revenue over the course of a budget cycle. And so, as you know, a budget cycle doesn't actually go into effect until 4 or 5 months after the legislature has deconvened. And so they're trying to look 2 or 3 years out and trying to get it right. So this next roundtable is set for October of this year, and I'm pleased to have been invited back to that. So I didn't say anything so offensive last time, I presume, that they wouldn't have me back. So it's a great group, and I'm honored to be a part of that. But just in terms of what's going on, I was listening to your narrative there, which is fabulous, by the way, and it can only be said that you have the best bumper music in Austin. there's no doubt about that.
Thank you. We work hard at that.
But I, what you suggested in terms of employment growth, a decline in the number of claims for unemployment assistance, a decline in the unemployment rate itself, and then wage growth. Well, these things are often presented as independent statistics from one another. I think everybody knows that they are certainly interconnected. But just think about it this way. The unemployment rate, as we sit here today, 3.9% for the month of July, 3.8% a couple of months ago, 3.9%. So we've been right at 3.8, 3.9, or 4.0 for the last 4 months.
Okay.
The last time we were at these levels is in the year 2000. It's been that long.
18 years.
Yeah, was this low. And so we had a nasty recession nationally and in Texas in the 2008, 2009, 2010 time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And we really, we are only just now kind of crawling. We exited that recession nationally, technically in mid-2009, but we've just sort of had this hangover since then, and this kind of economic malaise where growth rates were low and employment growth, even though we had it, wasn't really all that exciting. The unemployment rate wasn't coming down.
It's what Barack Obama called the new normal, quote unquote. These jobs aren't coming back.
He was not correct about that. I heard a number of economists sort of referencing that same trend. And so thankfully we're sort of turning that notion on its head right now.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is, listen, these things are pretty simple at their basic level. Think of wages as nothing more than the price of labor.
Okay.
And then think of labor in terms of supply and demand. When the labor supply begins to tighten up relative to demand, which is to say, when the slack in the labor market is taken up and the unemployment rate becomes low, the labor force, the people available to fill jobs,
mm-hmm.
is in shorter supply,
mm-hmm.
right, relative to growing demand out there, which is going to push wages up. It makes perfect economic sense to me that as the unemployment rate comes down, now finally we are beginning to see wage growth, which has been, you know, a little bit missing from this economy for quite some period of time now. And I just find myself hoping that this is beginning to happen in time to affect the midterms. But this is why that is occurring right now.
And we've talked about it before here on the show. We've got more jobs available in this economy than there are people to fill them. That's just unbelievable. So what do you see, and we got about a minute and a half before the first commercial break, what do you see as having been the biggest two or three, or maybe just one factor that's leading to this growth in the last 18 months?
Well, I'll give you two, but I'll start with one, and then we can go from there. Number one, tax cuts. No doubt about it. Listen, the partisan opposition to tax cuts That's what you're going to get from the other side. That's what you're going to get from the Dems. Mm-hmm. But that opposition was incoherent to begin with. It's utterly incoherent at this point. But remove any partisan aspect of this and forget who you are politically.
Okay.
When you turn more of household and business income back to households and businesses, there will be economic benefit, period. That is unavoidable. And I think tax reform and cuts in tax rates at the business and honestly business level in particular, but household level as well, has to be at the top of the list in terms of generating additional momentum for economic growth and job growth. And then closely behind that, and doesn't get enough discussion, is generally speaking regulatory reform.
Okay,
and
Carr, I got to cut you off right there on regulatory reform because we got to take a break for the news at the top of the hour. But we're visiting with Carr Ingram, economist for the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, on the Texas Insider Show, and we will be right back after this break in the news. I'm Jim Cardle. Thanks for joining us. Another good job there, Brian. A little Steve Miller, Texan and Austinite himself, I believe, taking the money and running. And welcome back to the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle, where we are talking about the nation's economy and the state's economy and what its impacts are politically. And I'm telling you, taking the money and run is what is happening right now. I appreciate you joining us, folks, for this week's edition of the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. We're visiting with the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers economist Carr Ingram and analyzing some of these things during a bit of a lull in the political hubbub. Thank goodness, alert the media that it's kind of slowed down here the last week or so in the doldrums of summer. But that doesn't mean that the economic numbers stopped this week, because they came out. And Carr, I mentioned before the break that consumer confidence is up, especially the interesting thing, consumer confidence among the income bracket of $75,000 a year and less are at record numbers. But you mentioned the tax cuts being the main driver probably, and then cuts in regulations. I think President Trump this week is announcing that he's going to cut back the average fuel economy standards that automobile manufacturers have to maintain and build smaller and more gas efficient cars, supposedly. But keep going on your overall theme here, because and then maybe transgress into Texas, because the national economy, I think, is it fair to say the national economy is going gangbusters? Let me ask you that. Is that an accurate assessment?
It is an accurate assessment. I'm not sure what set of numbers you could look at that might suggest otherwise. So, you know, you've got antis and naysayers and those that have some political agenda for wanting to find something wrong. But again, you know, these arguments, as I listen to them from an economic perspective, really don't hold any water at all. This is not economics can be very complicated, but it can also be very simple. In many cases, it just should be.
And then you mentioned
what's actually occurring: job growth, spending, declines in the unemployment rate, increases in the stock market, on and on and on. This economy has momentum behind it, and that continues at least through right now. We'll see what the future holds, but the stage has been set for continued movement in a right direction.
Well, let me ask you, because you mentioned the regulatory reform that Donald Trump, I mean, the EPA's rolling back regulations, we've got oil and gas exploration and some of the federal lands now opening up and on off the coastal waters. Texas has just been announced again for the 14th year in a row as being the top state to do business in, and a lot of people credit our low our pro-business environment. But how about the idea? I saw something the other day that California lost like 9,000 businesses last, their headquarters. We all think of Toyota moving up to Plano, but that's an example of people we know moving to Texas, but businesses also look around and they're moving to Texas. Talk about the Texas economy a little bit, if you can.
You would almost think that California set out to implement a strategy to run everybody out of that state who has any productivity about them whatsoever.
Isn't that the
darn what it looks
truth.
Like to me? And they're somewhat succeeding at doing that. The policies that are implemented in that state from the state level on down to a great many of the sizable metro areas, San Francisco in particular. When you set out to punish productivity, guess what? Productivity is going to leave you. That leaves the less than productive who have been taking from the productive to try to fill the gap in terms of revenue. And as you find out, it just ain't happening. And so these are the reasons for all sorts of budget and economic woes out that direction. The state of Texas does have a generally pro-business, business-friendly. But I would even go farther than that. I mean, there are less restrictions on business and household economic liberty in the state of Texas than there are in many other places.
Mm-hmm.
Many people like to credit the state, the strong state economy relative to the national economy, to our vast natural resources, to crude oil reserves, and so on and so forth. But, you know, you would be wrong to just leave that sitting right there. Venezuela has the same thing, and look at the shape they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you've got that stuff doesn't mean that you can exploit it. And that will turn your economy into a growing, thriving economy and keep it that way. I've often been asked what my recommendations for federal energy policy might be.
Okay, good.
And it's pretty complicated, but I'll see if I can boil it down for you.
Okay.
Get out of the way.
Yes.
Just get out of the way. That's my recommendation.
That's
for
it. I love
U.S.
that.
Energy policy. And in many respects, that's what we do in Texas. We get out of the way and let the people who know what they're doing do it and do it best. That grows our economy, grows our jobs, and makes it an extraordinary, almost unfathomable contribution to the consumer economy by what we were able to provide to them in terms of energy resources. And so, again, it's pretty complicated, but I think I could sum it up just like that.
Get government, get out of the way. Okay, let's break it down and get into some of the Texas-specific oil patch. A lot of people think only West Texas, where, if I remember correctly, you can set the record straight on this, we're about to become a larger producer than the country of Iran. But people don't realize, even over in East Texas, there's major plays being developed and found. What is the state of the oil and gas industry in Texas right now? Tell us some of the dynamic numbers that I can't.
We do think about production as Texas production as being largely Permian Basin-based, which is West Texas. But you're right, here in the Panhandle where I am,
mm-hmm.
East Texas, South Texas, everywhere there's considerable oil and gas activity. And just think about this. I mean, the Permian has been around for a long time. It's really flexing its muscle now, but it's been around for a long time. But we've got a relatively new production region in the state of Texas called, it's actually Eagle Ford. It's two words, but
okay.
Everybody just says Eagleford, you know, like it's one word with mm-hmm. Anyway, so Eagleford, when I say Eagleford, I'm actually talking about the Eagle Ford. So the Eagle Ford is a strip of production in South Texas that did not produce a barrel of oil until 2008, and it has really come on like gangbusters. I mean, this has, along with Permian production growth, is what has, as we sit here today, quadrupled daily crude oil production in Texas compared to where we were in about 2008, 2009.
Quadrupled.
Unbelievable. Quadrupled.
And what happened in 2008 that led to the Eagle Ford being accessible?
Well, essentially what happened was in the early part of the decades of the 2000s, Texas was the laboratory in a place called the Barnett Shale, which is a natural gas production mm-hmm. region in North Texas, kind of surrounding the Fort Worth metro area,
yeah.
Let's say. So
okay.
Parts of that to the north and east and west and south. That's the Barnett Shale there. So the Barnett Shale was the laboratory in the natural gas production arena for the broad implementation of these of this combination of production techniques called horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing. Well, as you now know, fracking, which is short for fracturing, mm-hmm. You know, to some people in the country, that's the new F word in America. Fracking. It's just almost the worst thing you can do.
Oh, the tree huggers and the environmentalists. Yeah,
you got it. And but what this did for us was allow us to explode natural gas production in the United States again with the Barnett Shale in the great state of Texas leading the way. What happened subsequent to that was that these same techniques were employed in crude oil production. And so that's really what cracked open the Eagle Ford, and it is what is driving unbelievable production growth in the Permian right now. And frankly, it's what's driving, it's often referred to as shale production, but that's what it is. That's how you produce from shale. You drill horizontally, you fracture that rock, and then you sort of shove something in there to hold it open, and the stuff just flows out of it. That's all fracturing amounts to. That's actually been going on for decades and decades. It's only just now that it's a crime in some people's mind to do it. Mm-hmm. But that's what has expanded our energy resources in the United States. And just ask yourself this question.
Okay.
This period of time leading up to when we turned production growth around and it started to go north, these years where it's declining, prices are going up, we're importing way more than we are producing.
Yeah.
We're captive to
OPEC.
You got it. I mean, mm-hmm. wasn't the thought process then generally across the board that we need to turn this around?
Yes.
That we want greater levels of energy independence. We want to be less reliant on OPEC yanking us around all the time and so on. Well, now that we have it, and this is what we have, by the way, a much greater level of U.S. and North American energy independence. And if we keep it up, we'll continue to move that direction. But again, is this not what we always profess to want? Well, it's what we have right now.
Okay, Carr, I'm going to stop you there because we got to go to our final commercial break. We're visiting with Carr Ingham, chief economist for the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers. And Carr, when we come back, I'm going to ask you about this statement that Donald Trump made to Governor Rick Perry, now Department of Energy Secretary, that America is going to not be energy independent, but energy dominant. We'll be right back on the Texas Insider Show, folks.
Hey, Austin, wake up and fly right on Talk 1370.
Working for the weekend, and welcome back to the Texas Insider Show. Folks, I'm Jim Cardle, and we are here every Saturday afternoon, speaking of the weekend, from 12:30 to 1:30. We hope you'll check us out during the week at texasinsider.org, where we post about 10 articles every day to keep you on the inside of Texas and national politics. And check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Texas Insider, and talk about working for the weekend. We've been talking about the employment and the great economic numbers across the nation that have come out this week. 157,000 jobs in the month of July were created across the nation. The unemployment rate has slipped to 3.9%. There's record numbers for Hispanic employment, record numbers for African-American employment, record numbers for the number of females in the job market these days. Wages are starting to go up. And we're visiting with Carr Ingham, chief economist for the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers. Carr, really appreciate you joining us today.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Really enjoying it.
And we've got a short 15-minute segment, Carr. I mentioned ahead of the break that I want to ask you about the nation being energy. Our U.S. production is going to be energy dominant, not energy dependent like you were talking about before the break on OPEC. But first, I want to put in a plug. If, folks, you want to learn more about Carr Ingham and the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, go to texasalliance.org on their website, or Facebook is Texas Alliance EP for Energy Producers. But Carr, a two-point question. You've been producing something called the Texas Petro Index, and I want you to talk about that first. And then second, in today's Austin American Statesman, there's an article about steel tariffs possibly hurting the Permian Basin. But in this article, it says, despite the nation's concern about tariffs, no major Permian Basin pipeline projects have been canceled. Kinder Morgan, Apache Corp, and Blackstone Energy recently announced a $2 billion Permian they're calling it a highway pipeline project to go over to the Gulf of Mexico. ExxonMobil and Plains All American are looking at a 1 billion barrel a day new pipeline. And Corpus Christi's expanding its port that's going to be people don't realize Corpus Christi's got the fourth largest port in America. Talk about the Texas Petro Index and some of this explosive growth that's going on.
Yeah, the Texas Petro Index is a tracking device for the Texas oil and gas exploration and production economy, the thing that we do in Texas.
Actually, and it's a one of a kind, right?
It is one of a kind, yeah. I sort of dreamed it up. I have these indexes in place at the metro level around Texas as well. So this is just sort of an aggregate of what's happening out there. And the components of this index are prices paid to producers for crude oil and natural gas, their statewide rig count, the number of drilling permits that are issued to drill oil and gas wells, the number of crude oil and natural gas wells completed, the estimated volume and value of crude oil and natural gas production in Texas, and then, of course, very importantly, the number of persons that are at work in that business out there, how many jobs exist. So the Petro Index is a fascinating thing right now.
And I bet it's going ballistic.
It is, but it remains below its peak 2014 levels when, before things went south, thanks to an 80% price crash in crude oil.
Yes.
What we have right now is crude oil production in Texas at all-time record levels. So we surpassed 4 billion barrel a day mark in Texas in early 2018. Crude oil production blew through its early, I think it's 1972. We're going to set a new annual record in 2018 and break a 1972 record. We're already at daily production records right now. We're going to set new natural gas production records nationally in Texas as well. But the Petro Index itself is not as high as it was in 2014 because the rig count is lower, the number of persons, although these numbers are going up and they're going up strongly, but the number of persons that are working in that business is below its peak levels in 2014. Same with drilling permits and well completions. What does this tell me? Well, it tells me that the industry has gotten very, very efficient at doing what it's doing, and it is producing more with less. This is what all industries endeavor to do. The oil and gas business has done it to an uber sense and with a vengeance. So while these numbers are on the rise, mostly what oil and gas companies are doing is producing more than they ever have before in Texas and making it available to the Texas and U.S. consuming public at the household and business level. And then, very importantly, we're exporting more of that now than we ever have before. Approaching 30% of what we produce is now being exported somewhere else around the globe. So,
wow.
A lot of moving parts to this, but these things that we're witnessing right now are, as this is a term you and I have used before, it's transformational in nature. And we're witnessing things that we just didn't think were possible for the longest period of time.
Yeah. How about these, you mentioned earlier in the show that the handwriting's on the wall. The economy's growing at such a rate now that it's going to last probably, I think most folks think, into the end of 2019 for the next year. But how about some of these, talk about the economic impact of some of these pipelines and the export. People don't realize how we actually export out of Houston and out of Corpus Christi. And these major companies are pouring billions of dollars into oil and gas right now.
Well, what happens is, and this is, again, a pretty simple concept, when you produce crude oil or natural gas at the field level, in other words, somewhere out in the middle of nowhere in West Texas, what you need to be able to do is get that from where it comes out of the ground to the marketplace. The marketplace is either the refining complex along the coast, it's coastal export markets, it's piping mm-hmm. natural gas into the state, into the country of Mexico. In other words, it has to go from there to somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
The extraordinary, and I mean extraordinary, production growth for both crude oil and natural gas in the Permian has simply overwhelmed the ability, which is often referred to as takeaway capacity, the capacity of pipelines to move that out of there to the marketplace,
okay,
wherever that may be. And in fact, there's a firm named Genscape that does great work. And their estimation is that from May to June in 2018, the amount of crude oil produced in the Permian now exceeds the pipeline capacity to get it out of there to market.
Oh,
so this means that the market, that oil and gas producers, the industry is screaming, I mean screaming, for additional pipeline takeaway capacity to get that out of there and get it to market. So this is the... these are the origins of the pipeline projects that you're talking about, and they simply cannot get here fast enough.
So are we in a position, I mentioned going into the break, and I love this. Rick Perry, our former governor, gets not enough credit for setting up the economy that we're living in today during his governorship. Now he's Secretary of Energy. And Donald Trump instructs him when he walks into the office, you don't need to make the United States energy independent. You need to make the United States energy dominant. Is it true that we are going to surpass some of the Middle East countries in production?
Yeah, so depending on what one's definition of that term might be,
mm-hmm.
I'm probably all for that. I suppose there could be a case or two in which I might take issue with that. If energy dominance means, listen, we are going to allow you, Texas and U.S. oil and gas producers, to do what you do best, we are going to get out of the way and stay out of the way. You are going to produce an ever greater amount of what we consume locally, and then we're going to give you the ability to export that around the globe as well. If that's what energy dominant means, I'm all for it. If energy independence and dominance means that we decide by policy that we are never going to import another barrel of crude oil, I would be opposed to that for a host of reasons, not the least of which is that our refineries in the country are not greatly set up to refine what we're producing right now.
Really?
And that's exactly right. So we need the ability to import what we are set up to refine and process. We need the ability to export what others are best set up to refine and process. And this is the essence of trade. You know, we do what suits our competitive advantage best, and they do as well. And then we, when we need something, we have the wealth to go out into the global marketplace and buy it. And so that's kind of where we are. So if energy dominance means that first set of things, bring it on, man. I'm all for it. We have we've reduced the amount of crude oil import relative to our usage from about 65%. 65%, just think about that.
Wow.
In the mid-2000s, we probably got down to about 20% in 2014, went up again when things went south in the oil and gas business here. Now it's on the way back down again. I don't want to get all the way to zero because we need the ability to trade for the kinds of, all crude oil is not the same. We need the ability to trade for the kinds of crude oil that we're best set up to refine and process here in the United States. But there's no doubt about the fact that we have unshackled ourselves from the impacts of geopolitics in the Middle East and OPEC and whatever it is they're trying to do through market collusion out there. The the consuming public in the United States is the great beneficiary of this.
Okay, well, Carr Ingham, we've been the great beneficiary of your time and your input. We really appreciate you joining us. Carr Ingham from the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers. Appreciate your wisdom. Hope you'll come back in the future, will you?
Yes, and thank you so much for having me. And the thing we did not get to do today that I was hoping we would get to do is argue about tariffs, but we'll do that another time.
We'll do that next time. Carr Ingham, Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, thanks for joining us. As I started off the show, folks, this is all goes toward the American mindset. American jobs are coming back. American families are feeling good about their family finances. And we hope you'll join us to talk about more of the same next week from 12:30 to 1:30 right here on Talk 1370, The Right Choice for the Texas Insider Show. I'm Jim Cardle. Have a great weekend, everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.